This is the Soil Sense podcast, where we believe that building healthier soils is not just a prescription, but rather a pursuit. It's a journey that requires collaboration, curiosity, and communication among farmers, researchers, agronomists, consultants, and extension. You're going to hear their stories and discover how and why they're working together to make sense out of what's happening in the soil. Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Soil Sense. I'm one of your hosts, Tim Hamrich. Today, co-host Dr. Abby Wick and I take you back one more time to Agronomy on Ice in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, that took place back in February. As you've heard in other episodes this season, we captured several interviews at this event, and this will be the last of those interviews that we share with you that happens to be with the guy who started it all, Jason Hansen, along with his partner in crime in Ag Mafia and the Agronomist Happy Hour podcast, Kyle Oakey. Jason's been a regular contributor on Soil Sense. He's also one of the facilitators of the Trusted Advisor Partnership Program that you've heard about in other episodes in the past. And we featured both him and Kyle on our Agronomy on Ice episode last year in April. We'll talk to the guys about this knack they seem to have for making things fun when it comes to learning and exchanging ideas about agronomy and soil health. We'll also hear some of their approaches when it comes to soil health as independent agronomists, Jason's experience with the Trusted Advisor Partnership, what they've learned from doing their podcast, and more. Both Jason and Kyle have each left corporate ag retail jobs to start their own independent agronomic consulting businesses. Jason, several years ago with Rock and Roll Agronomy based in Webster, North Dakota, and Kyle just in this past year with Agile Agronomy based in Dickinson, North Dakota. The two also joined forces with Bridget Riedel to form Ag Mafia, which put on the Agronomy on Ice event and is offering training, coaching, and other media services. I gave Kyle and Jason the good mics for this interview, so you'll have to forgive some bad audio coming from Abby and myself, but really it's Jason and Kyle who are bringing the value in today's episode, so you'll be able to hear all of that loud and clear. We'll kick things off with Kyle sharing a little bit about how he thinks about soil health in his role as an independent consultant.
Soil health is an all-encompassing term, but for me in more arid western North Dakota environment, soil health might look a lot different than someone that's in Fargo, North Dakota, or someone that's even like La Crosse, Wisconsin, or somewhere in Illinois. And I look at what those that have 35, 40 inches of rainfall in a longer season can do with cover crops and soil biology, and just making something a lot more diverse in the rotation. I wish we could do that, but then I think back that, okay, we're yield limiting and we do employ some pretty stringent practices. I mean, we're very, very stringent no-till. There's a difference in no-till where we're at. You'll get in an area like the Beach and Golva area, right on the western edge as you're going into Montana. They do not call no-till if you have a shank drill that turns any bit black, even if it's just like a 1-inch opening. It has to be a disc drill. And it makes a difference. You go soil sample on some of those farms, they've been no-tilling for 30-some years, even though we get maybe 4, 5, 6 inches of rainfall during the growing season, you have to scratch away a duff layer with your soil probe just to get to the soil so you can get a full core out of your probe. And I see other farmers in the same area that aren't as stringent with those. They're direct seeding and they're no-till, but they use different practices. So we may fine tune things a little bit more. We may not be taking off straw. We're doing things with better residue management with the types of openers. And we're really trying to focus on how can we conserve moisture. And if you can conserve moisture, then that's where everything comes to life for us.
And you said Agile Agronomy, is that the name of the company?
Yep.
Okay. And so is that an independent crop consulting company?
Yep.
Okay.
That is what I do.
Great. And how long have you been doing that?
I am a year into it.
Okay. How's it going?
I absolutely love it. I shouldn't say I would do this sooner. I absolutely really enjoy what I did before, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity I was given and the development I got and just everything, crop protection and adjuvants and all that. But for me, it was time. And doing this on my own has been the best move I felt like I could make, because it's a lot of fun to be able to be impactful to the local group of farmers and retailers that I work with.
And were you surprised at how many of them wanted some independent crop consulting services, or how did that work?
Yes and no on some of that. So there's not a lot of crop consultants in my particular area. And so drought kind of affects a lot of things. And so retail is where the predominant agronomic advice comes from. And they're still the most important because they're going to be the ones that touch the most acres and make the biggest impact. But there is a need for it. And it wasn't hard to carve out my own little space to do that.
And Jason, you've been at the independent crop consulting thing for quite a while now. I know you're a part of this trusted advisor partnership. Can you talk about what appeals to you about that and what that is and where you hope it goes?
So I've been probably independent consulting either on the side or as my own business for probably 20 years now. And the Trust Advisor Program, there's like this goal that you're trying to do better things, right? But for me, I think the biggest thing is going to be the network that's going to get built with it. Okay, so when I started doing stuff 20 years ago, there was a lot of people that had a lot of experience. I think it's important that us that have been in the industry for a long time relay that on to people to make the changes we want to make quicker instead of it going longer. So there's some things. So my area where I'm at in the northeast part of the state, we're probably going to manage things a lot differently than Kyle. We sit down when we do a podcast, we usually it's 45 minutes to an hour of just talking about stuff before we actually do it. He's got low pH. He's got issues with that. You're managing water to save it. I'm using cover crops to probably manage water the opposite way, to get rid of it and how that rolls out. So when you go from his area to my area and all points in between, there's a lot of experiences that people had. And that network to me is super important because if I can pick something up from whoever and use that and I can get something done 2 years sooner than it probably would happen, that's a win.
And what's that look like for somebody who's never heard of the Trust Advisor Partnership? How is that network being built?
Well, it starts at a point for the most part. You know, I'm a certified crop advisor. I've never had one of my farmers say or are interested that I'm a CCA because what they're interested in is myself and how I interact with them. So for me personally, I think that's important. And from that point on, people that are outside, we have to start at a certain point and we're going to start there and it's going to spread out and go to other people, because we got great advisors in the state who aren't certified crop advisors, or they have been in the past. But from that, we're going to do something where I think it's going to build more momentum, because we started doing this and it's, I don't know, it's surprising. It feels to me, to some degree, like how Agronomy on Ice started. It's just like, here's an idea, we implement something, there gets to be more people involved, ideas come in, and then all of a sudden, boom, it takes off. And then you got people like, hey, I want to be a part of this. I'd like to join. I see what you're doing, or they kind of hang back and then it registers. So it's better that people want to do it than it's something where you feel like you have to do it.
Well, you've done that a few times now, you two with Agronomist Happy Hour, the podcast, you've done that with Agronomy on Ice. And now you feel like the Trusted Advisor Partnership's kind of got that same feel. What is it that it takes to kind of reach that level where it starts to really ignite? I mean, what have you noticed that's common amongst those things that really are the key ingredients to eventually blowing up in a good way?
I would say from a podcasting standpoint, we've kind of dived into some of the topics right now that are like people are the most interested in. And that, I'll just call it the biological sphere. And we've had some really awesome podcast guests on. And we're still trying to learn.
That's my personal, I guess, drive or motivation into that is, I want to know more about regenerative agriculture. I want to know more about biologicals. I want to know more about the biological products that are sold and that people are using and the successes or even the failures, to understand where things don't and do work and the practices they're implementing. And yeah, we've hit a few guests, some on purpose and some totally on accident, that I just get so excited talking to some of these guys on that topic. And I don't know if it's just like, it's different, it's unique, but I think more so what it is you're just hitting such a level of passion with those people that are in that space doing it. And that's what gets me excited, talking to them. You can just feel the excitement when they get talking about something that they really enjoy. And then it like feeds off of each other and you just go. So I guess I could see, you know, outside of the podcast, when you guys are talking this trusted advisor program, I can see that, you know, just listening to Jason talk about it.
Kind of finding like minds that about things they're really passionate about.
Yeah. And there's people that are going to say, well, I don't think that would work. I think this would work. And I'm like, well, we tried that and this is what happened. Now it was these years. And then you get into a whole different discussion. And so it's all about, I think, the comfort zone. So like when we podcast and we go someplace, it's been really good because we have people that will come up to us and feel like they know us. And you hope you get to that point with this too, where people feel comfortable coming to you and say, hey, you know what? We've tried this. It's not worked. What are you doing? Because I see that you're doing it. And that's what I would like to try. Yeah, good. Because I need some help with this over here. So maybe there's some information we can exchange and things can turn out really well. So again, that relationship, the networking building, and then just, I think everybody's probably passion about doing better.
I think when I look at what you guys are doing, I see this, that you really enjoy working together. On the stuff, so everything that you've built, you can tell that you guys love to work together. And that's, I think, what we see in the Trusted Advisor Partnership is I love working with you and working with Lee and the whole Sustainable Food Lab. And I love working with this new group of people that are coming through it. And Kyle, I can't wait to work with you on it. Mm-hmm. But this idea of like picking people that you really want to work with and then moving forward in a way that just you're having fun and you're kind of forget that you're working.
There you go. That's the key right,
it's hitting that level. Yep.
You're excited about it. It's a challenge. So you accept the challenge, and then in the process, yeah, there's some fun things. I was talking with one of the folks that was in your meeting yesterday, Abby, last night at the social, and it was about dry beans, and we both had the same conclusion. I would love to strip-till dry beans and then plant rye in there because most of those fields get worked, and they just blow. And people are going to forget that this winter because we got so much snow. So from Grand Forks to Williston, it's going to be one shade of white, and it's not always that way.
No, it definitely isn't. This is a unique winter.
So how do we combine these two ideas? How do we make it fun to pursue building healthier soils? Tapping into your guys' wisdom here.
You have to be able to be willing to share ideas, successes and failures with people. Take constructive criticism if it's just you're too maybe narrow-minded on some stuff, and then realize that everything is area and weather dependent. Because I can't go out to your area in Dickinson and Belfield and Mott and say, oh, what are you guys doing? You don't even know what you're doing.
Well, and it's taken me living there 10 years to fully just understand the system. And I was originally up in Devil's Lake when I started my career, and originally from the Fargo-Moorhead area. So Devil's Lake, Fargo-Moorhead, you just remove the potholes from Devil's Lake. And then, I mean, there's a little more clay, but productive ground, good farm ground. Everyone's not afraid to tackle new challenges and try to increase their yield levels and all that. And you keep moving farther west, and it gradually gets drier. And everyone kind of has a different mindset. They're very successful, but they're a little more conservative. And it took a while to kind of understand when and where you can actually start to put the throttle down. And those folks do that. So they know when to be conservative because they've always got dry and drought on their mind. But when the going's good, they're not afraid to do something. And so I guess it's just being able to call the audible, being flexible. One of the farmers I work with actually grew this year. It'll be the first year he hasn't grown it, but he's grown daikon radish seed that's used and sold for cover crop mixes for over 10 years. And he's seen a declining demand for daikon radish, and it's almost like a switch. Like there's more vetch, and there's more rye, and there's more triticale, and some of these other mixes versus radish, at least through who he has been selling to. But he wants to try cover crops because he also wants to practice that. And he goes, we've tried this and we've done this. And he goes, there's only 1 year in the last 10 that it actually worked out. And it did work out that year. But not every year works that way. But it's not for a lack of trying. We've just learned over time. And again, it's just being flexible, I guess. I guess that's the way to try to be successful on the soil health thing is not one size fits all. And that's agronomy.
Well, what's next for each of you guys? I mean, both in your respective businesses and in this combined ag mafia empire you're building.
I like the way you talk, Tim. We have a lot of ideas. So one of the things we see out there is companies have become more sales focused. And what we used to do was a lot of training and sales support. And it seems like a lot of that's going away. So there's still a demand for that type of thing. So we're trying to fill some of that stuff. We got asked and did. We shot 6 videos for Andrew Thostenson at NDSU for pesticide recertification. Because people's attention span, you cannot sit through probably that topic for an hour or even a half an hour. So we cut a lot of 3 to 6 minute videos. They got dropped in different parts of the day. We'll probably end up doing some more stuff like that.
try to focus on the training aspect of things outside of like our entertainment thing with the Agronomy on Ice. We get asked on a regular basis from young agronomists that are starting out 1 or 2 years in, and they're reaching out because our names are out there. They're going, what are some resources? How can I learn more about herbicides in certain crops? How can I learn more about adjuvants? How can I learn more about biologicals and not from a biased source? Somewhere to help kind of sift through the noise on there and just understand the underlying principles of what makes an adjuvant work and the classes of adjuvants and even to the biological end and even just some straight-laced agronomy. And we're still trying to figure that out as we go. What does that look like? How is that done? How do you reach people and help them with that? And then as a business, how can we capitalize on that?
With a name like Ag Mafia, it sounds a little scary, but you are all very approachable. So I think that's probably a huge benefit in this whole world of agriculture, just being people that others want to ask questions to.
And that name came about where we previously worked. We had a Snapchat account and we handed it off every week. So somebody new had it, and then they didn't want us to do it anymore because the marketing didn't have control of it. So we just took the concept, and that was the name we came up with, was Ag Mafia on Snapchat. So during the summer, the busy times of ag, we might have somebody from an agronomist to an air pilot that's spraying to somebody that works in finance to a machinery, works at an implement dealer. And so you get to see that side of the business during that time of the year, and you would not believe how popular that is. So we just took that name because it's like, that's kind of cool, and went with it.
Well, I think last year you guys had said you wanted to eventually interview an agronomist from every state. So how many states do you have left? How are we doing on that?
Oh, we've fallen behind. But we've got probably some international contacts. We had one here where it's surprising because our listenership is fairly local, it feels like, but they love hearing about what other people do farther away and the differences, so they can kind of compare some things. Because if you travel, you kind of maybe want to have some of that as in the back of your mind when you go someplace and meet new people. So yeah, we got, I don't know, this week we got something in the pipe, and we went up to Canada and actually did a live broadcasting for Winfield United Canada. And that was a phenomenal thing to do. And they just, all the questions came from the crowd. Yeah, they set like 12 craft beers in front of us. And
they really embraced the happy hour thing. They brought different craft brews from across Saskatchewan.
And that was a great conference. It was a great conference because the first day went through a lot of agronomic stuff. The whole second day was all on sustainability. And they were probably generalized, but no one's probably as opinionated as a Canadian. They will tell you, right? They're not going to wait 2 days or whatever. They will tell it to you and how they see it. And I really appreciate that. So their point was the same way. We've been doing some of these practices for a long time because that's where no-till probably originated in the North American continent, because they were forced to do it. And they're very innovative in Canada. But it was a great conference to go to and listen and participate in, and then that we got to do that.
That second day was great. They had multiple panels with people from biological businesses. And it seems like the focus on the biological space, so to speak, here is on yield enhancement. There, I heard yield enhancement is a small portion of it. They're also talking about biofungicides and ways to protect plants, too. And so there was a lot of focus on that. Like, can't remember the business names. I want to say Stoller was one of them. They were looking at Fusarium head blight amendments. They're biological. So I was like, that's a big deal to me because fungicides can't do everything sometimes. So to see a biological product come in that can help aid with that and be a part of the program, that's good. And that's what everyone wants to see is it doesn't want it to all be synthetic fertilizers. And we're starting to see a lot of those things fail. If it's synthetic pesticides, fertilizers, all that. So it's, what are the cultural practices we can do? What are biological products that we can introduce? Because we're implementing cultural practices, we have less pressure. And then we're allowed to use biological products that could help curb pest issues that we would have otherwise. It's definitely a different way of thinking. And I think it's moving in a very positive direction. So it's fun to hear. Just, I wasn't hearing those things stateside, I guess.
Well, in that sense, I mean, Brian Jenks probably delivered one of the hardest gut punches that we've seen in a long time with his AIM and Sharpen Kochia non-performance in the state. you would not believe how many times that I've talked to people and say, have you ever thought about using rye as a means of kochia control? Because I think it's always thought about as a cover crop or managing water that way. And almost 100% of the time, the answer is no. So it's a new mode of action. It's something different that we can use. And you go to talk to Greg Endres at NDSU and in some of the data, they got really decent suppression. So I don't know.
And there's a lot of science behind it, because it's not only if you plant green, which is good for weed control, you have to have good planting equipment. You have to know what you're doing to make that happen. Because if you don't have the good equipment and you don't know what you're doing, you may go, this whole cover crop business is a bunch of baloney and this isn't for me. But then you wonder, well, why are these people in other states, or maybe my neighbor is having so much good luck with it? And so that's part of it too, but it's fun to see the science involved. Like, we were at NDSU's Wild World of Weeds, and they invited Rodrigo Worley in from the University of Wisconsin as a keynote speaker to talk about their work with cover crop rye. And they would actually talk about when the right termination point was to get the correct tonnage of material so that it was a mulch layer that was actually successful at inhibiting water hemp growth. So I was like, that's impressive. That's really cool. That's a different perspective outside of soil health, that you're getting soil health benefits from doing something like that, but this is also helping them in other ways. So it's like, I see this as bridging a gap. Again, pesticides aren't the full answer. You can't rely 100% on herbicides. There are other cultural practices like rotation and the cover crop thing that can really help. And I think this is going to bridge that gap. And then people realize, oh, okay, well, maybe I can implement maybe multi-species cover crops in certain cropping situations to cover the ground, you know, from August through October. And that would also help them in weed control, where maybe their focus wasn't there before.
Love it, guys. Well, that's probably a great place to end. I know you got a busy day, so encourage people to check out Agronomist Happy Hour. Come to Agronomy on Ice next year. Anything else we should remind them?
No, I think follow along on social media for the Trust Advisor program as well, and to keep checking in on that, because there's going to be some good stuff that's going to go along with that. And then the people that are tagged in on that and you see, reach out, ask questions.
Reach out and ask questions indeed. Thank you so much to Jason Hansen and Kyle Oakey, not only for this interview, but for continuing to find ways to make this stuff interesting and fun. Everyone who I've talked to who's attended Agronomy on Ice speaks extremely highly of it and wants to go back every single year, and their podcast, Agronomist Happy Hour, is definitely one to check out as well. Thank you both, Jason and Kyle, for coming back onto the show and for being willing to be interviewed on such a busy day for them. Thanks as well to our sponsors of this season of Soil Sense: the North Central Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program, the North Dakota Corn Council, the North Dakota Wheat Commission, the North Dakota Soybean Council, the North Harvest Dry Bean Association, the North Dakota Barley Council, and Anheuser-Busch. If you're getting value from this podcast, we'd love it if you'd leave us ratings and reviews on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or both, and share your favorite episodes on Twitter or other social media using the hashtag SoilSense. We'll be back with more great soil health content in a couple days.